The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable William S. Greenberg presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. I'm Judge Greenberg. With me are Judges Falvey and Lauer. We're here in the matter of Andrews versus the Secretary. Will counsel, beginning with appellant counsel, enter your appearances, please?
Your Honor, Richard Spataro, lead counsel for appellant.
Bart Stichman, co-counsel for appellant.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jonathan Scruggs on behalf of the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. And with me at counsel's table today is Deputy Chief Counsel Sarah Fusino.
Does appellant's counsel wish to reserve time?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 6 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. If counsel are ready, we'll begin. Go ahead.
Judge Greenberg, may it please the court. For the past two decades, in all of its remand decisions since the decision in Kucharowski v. West, the court has expressly ordered that appellant has the right to submit additional evidence to the board on remand. For the past three decades, since Fletcher v. Derwinski, the court has included in remand orders language requiring the board to conduct a critical examination of the justification for its decision. During this time, the joint motions for remand that have been approved by the court have also included language ordering the board to allow veterans to submit additional evidence to the board on remand and ordering the board to conduct a critical examination for the justification of its decision. This case is before the court now because although the parties agreed that the board committed multiple errors and that a remand was warranted, the secretary refused to include language in a joint motion for remand recognizing Mr. Andrews' right to submit additional evidence to the board on remand and the board's obligation to conduct a critical examination of the justification for its decision. Mr. Andrews refused to agree to a JMR with this language, and the case went to full briefing because, as I'll explain in more detail later, the ability to submit additional evidence to the board is critical for Mr. Andrews to win one of his claims at the board. The secretary argues that the court is barred from using language it has consistently used in its remand orders for decades because Mr. Andrews' claims are covered by the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017, which I'll be referring to today as the AMA. The secretary asserts that the AMA is inconsistent with this language. Specifically, the secretary's position is that the AMA In AMA cases, veterans do not have a right to submit additional evidence to the board on remand, that the board is not obligated to conduct a critical examination of the justification for its decision. In his brief, he argues that any order by the court directing the secretary to afford the appellant the opportunity to submit additional evidence would be in direct contravention of controlling statutory and regulatory provisions. Your Honors,
if I may, this is Judge Greenberg. Why is any of this language necessary? Shouldn't it be a matter of law, regardless of which statutory scheme is employed, that the veteran has the right to submit additional probative material on remand?
Your Honor,
so you want us to settle this once and for all? Is that why you're here?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right.
We're here because we agree that this court order, the court's case law still is binding precedent, but the secretary has asserted that they will not abide by that binding precedent.
Go ahead.
And Your Honor,
this is Judge Falvey. Could I ask a follow up on that? Why is it that you just laid out that for decades this language has been included in remands from the court? I think I understand why it might be included in the JMPR or JMR, but why is it that that language is still included in a remand from a single judge decision or from a panel when the precedent would be binding even if we didn't mention it? I mean, why is it that that language being repeated, that boilerplate language being repeated in every opinion, changes anything below?
Your Honor, I would argue that it doesn't technically change anything, because you're correct. This is binding precedent. But it seems
so we don't need to include it. There's going to be a right to a hearing, and a right to introduce additional evidence.
Your Honor, I would argue that because the Secretary has now asserted the position that they will not follow Kucharowski or Fletcher, then now, even more than before, it is extremely important that the court does include this language.
Well, I think they would concede that they will follow the law, whether that law is found in statute, regulation, or case law of the court.
I agree, Your Honor, but now the Secretary asserts that the Appeals Modernization Act somehow changed that case law, somehow extinguished the court's prior holdings such that they no longer apply.
Well, let's maybe you're going to get to this, and if you are, go ahead and feel free to deflect my question and get to it. Let's assume that the court is inclined to say that this is a ripe issue, and so we're going to deal with it. And let's assume we're also So maybe I am skipping ahead, that Kucharowski doesn't apply, that the statutory framework has changed, that Kucharowski relied upon, and so we're going to look right to the statute. Where in the regulation, where in the statute do you find the right to introduce additional evidence on remand from this court?
Your Honor, the right to submit additional evidence and the court's power to order the board to allow appellants to submit additional evidence stems from 38 U.S.C. section 7252A. That gives the court the power to order remands as appropriate. That's where the court's authority stems from, Your Honor.
Right, but outside of our authority to issue a remand and give instructions as appropriate, you know, let's say the court's willing to say we can give instructions on remand. Is there anywhere in the statute that says on remand, or anywhere you can make the argument that on remand there's a right to present additional evidence? Now that we've got kind of a closed universe of evidence based on the election of the direct docket, where's the right to now on remand introduce additional evidence?
Your Honor, the statutory language and the regulatory language, that language is not included. The language, the statute, and the VA's regulations do not address at all the veteran's rights on remand. It addresses the process, the appeals process coming up from the regional office to the board, the initial appeal that is read at the court, or read at the board, I'm sorry.
Okay. And that election, if you will, or that opting for a particular docket before the board can be modified, right? The statute provides for modification of that.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. Appellants can modify.
Is that where you find the right to, on remand, get additional evidence in before the board? You in essence, opt from the direct docket to the evidentiary one, where you're allowed maybe no hearing, but you want the right to introduce evidence.
Your Honor, yes, I think that statutory provision does provide a basis for the court to allow appellants to change lands.
Thank you. Thank you. I think you've answered my question.
To continue, Your Honors, as I mentioned when answering the judge's questions, the court's authority to compel the board to allow appellants to submit additional evidence stems from 7252A. And this power, it was given to the court by the Veterans Judicial Review Act. There's nothing in the AMA that addresses, much less alters, the court's power to craft its remand orders.
Would you do me a favor, please? This is Judge Greenberg. Just read that. It's very concise and direct. Read the language from the statute, if you will, that you're relying on.
It says the court shall have the power to affirm, modify, or reverse a decision of the board, or to remand the matter as appropriate. It's the last sentence of 7252A, Your Honor.
And that's the 1988 statute.
That is, Your Honor, it's been renumbered since then, but yes, that was the language in the original 1988 Veterans Judicial Review Act.
Right. So your argument is that it's clear and unmistakable that the power to make specific instructions on remand derives from that statute.
Your Honor, that is our argument.
So that if we had, as a court, never put in, as my colleague and good friend suggests, it as boilerplate in every decision, bearing in mind that each one of these decisions goes to the parties, perhaps to the world in terms of publication, but we consider each case on its merits. So you can't assume that either lawyers or parties, certainly not veterans, would know what their right is on remand. So even if we hadn't said it before, we have the power to do so in any case.
Yes, Your Honor, you have the power. And not only do you have the power, as we discussed in our reply brief, the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment requires the veterans to have this right to submit additional evidence on remand.
Can we make our decision short of involving a matter of constitutional dimension, just Absolutely. As a matter of statutory construction?
Absolutely, Your Honor. You do not have to rely on it.
Further to that, by the way, I apologize. My granddaughter watched one of these arguments the other day, and when asked, well, what'd you think of grandfather? She said, well, his job was to interrupt. And so here I am. So my question is, even since there's no language in the subsequent statute that would preclude the submission of further evidence, may we also infer that Congress didn't intend to modify the original statute from 1988?
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor.
All right, go ahead.
We would argue that there's nothing in the AMA to change the court's authority to do so. They did not modify 7250A, and it would be inappropriate for them to have implicitly modified 7258 through its language in the AMA, and as well as modifying the court's case law, longstanding case law. If it were to do that, it would have needed to do so expressly, and there's nothing in any of the statutes of the AMA that addresses the court's power to remand cases, that addresses even how the board should handle cases upon remand. So, Your Honor, we believe that the statutory authority is there. Now, the reason the court has uniformly provided these veterans the right to submit additional evidence on remand, we think it is best expressed in the court's 2017 decision in Cook v. Snyder. In that case, the court explained that it was plain that the focus of a claim may change or evolve between the board's initial consideration of the claim and between the board's consideration of that claim following a remand from the court, which, as the court noted, often directs the board's attention to statutes, regulations, directives, or facts it may have missed. In other words, the nature of a case changes between the time it starts and the veteran files his appeal or her appeal with the board to the time it goes through the initial board decision, goes to the court, and comes back to the board. This is a different stage of appellate proceedings. And Mr. Andrews' case is a perfect example of a type of case where there's been such a drastic change in the nature of it between the veteran's initial election to take his case to the board on appeal and the court and the remand that the parties ask the court to enter in this case. In this case, the regional office denied Mr. Andrews increased ratings for his knee disabilities. And in its rating decisions, the regional office did not address the veteran's entitlement to a rating under Diagnostic Code 5259 for his removal of semilunar cartilage. And it was the board on appeal that in the first instance addressed whether he was entitled to this a rating under this diagnostic code. And the board, it found that separate ratings under Diagnostic Code 5259 were not warranted, despite acknowledging that his partial meniscectomies and episodes of pain were present, because according to the board, there's nothing in the record to indicate that the meniscus was removed. Now, in our briefs, the parties agree that the board erred in holding that the application of DC 5259 requires complete removal of the meniscus. Thus, the issue on remand will be whether Mr. Andrews experiences symptoms related to his partial meniscectomies for which he is not already compensated by other diagnostic codes. Now, if the evidence demonstrates that he has such symptoms, the board will be obligated to grant 10% ratings for each of his knees. But as the secretary concedes, the board might decide this issue on the Diagnostic Code 5259 application and rating on the record if it is remanded by the court without further proceedings to the regional office. But in our view, the current record doesn't include enough evidence to support the veteran's rating under DC 5259. But Mr. Andrews does have such evidence. In our discussions with him, he has expressed that he has information and evidence that would show he has symptoms related to his meniscectomies that aren't already compensated by his other diagnostic codes. Now, the only way that the board would be able to grant his claims for separate ratings under 5259 would be by considering this additional evidence. He desperately wants the opportunity to submit this evidence to the board, but the secretary refused to include language in a joint motion for remand that recognized his right to do so.
And so you're here to avoid this constant repetitive litigation. If you went back on the basis that the secretary insists and you made your record, and then you'd be back here and we'd still confront the same legal question. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. This is,
among other things, a matter of judicial economy, that the court should consider the arguments that you've proffered you're going to make in terms of submitting the additional evidence below now, rather than wait for it to come back on a direct appeal from what you consider an erroneous application by the RO and ultimately by the board.
Yes, Your Honor. It's a matter of judicial economy.
Why shouldn't we just approach this in a fairly direct manner? If you've been told by the secretary that they refuse to allow this language in the remand order, that means they're going to direct their subordinates to consider their legal interpretation in considering these cases. That means you're going to lose below if you attempt to put in this additional evidence. And that means you'll be back here again. So why isn't it right for us to decide this once and for all?
Your Honor, it is absolutely right for the court to decide this issue. We know the secretary's treatment, how they're going to treat this claim on remand. They've expressed that in the briefs. We know that they will deny the veteran the right to submit this additional evidence. And we know that if they do, yes, Your Honor, we will be back at the court. We will be delaying a 60-year-old veteran's right to get his ratings decided by the VA in a timely manner. Your Honor, this issue, and it, not only that, Your Honor, this is language that the court has included in its remand orders, over 8,000 of them over the past two decades. It's common for the court to include this language and direct the board, pursuant to the court's authority under 7250A, 7252A, to direct what it should be doing on remand. Now, and again, our position is that 7250A is the primary reason the court has the authority to order the board to submit additional evidence. But the principles of due process, like I mentioned before, they also require the court to allow the veteran the opportunity to submit this additional evidence on remand. The fundamental requirement of due process is the opportunity to be heard at a meaningful time and in a meaningful manner.
Look, this is Judge Falvey. Your due process argument, was that made in the opening brief or just in the reply brief? I saw like a one, maybe just a clause in the opening brief that says, and due process. But then in your reply brief, you lay out a couple pages regarding due process. But was it made any deeper than that in the opening brief?
No, Your Honor. We did not significantly get into, we got into it more in the reply brief, Your Honor.
Again, along that same lines, you know, with respect to your due process argument, I guess, if the error that you're pointing to was made by the RO, and in face of that error, the appellant elected the direct docket, how is there to do process violation when he opted not to introduce any additional evidence, opted not for to have a hearing, how is that a due process violation if we say you're bound by, if our remand instruction that we have the power to give says you're bound by that option under the statute?
Your Honor, in this case, the veteran was not aware of this issue. The regional office did not address his rating under Diagnostic Code 5250.
But all the facts were there. I mean, he may not have been aware of it, and he may not even have been represented by counsel at the time. But the facts upon which you're saying an error was made were available, and in that RO decision, or the absence of the information was in the RO decision. The basis was all there.
Your Honor, I think we do have to look at this from a veteran's perspective, a layperson unrepresented by counsel who is not sophisticated to know that a knee disability rating might be entitled to six or seven different, or maybe not that many, but four or five different diagnostic codes applicable to a knee disability. This is a complicated issue. And again, if the regional office had addressed it and he had realized that he needed some evidence to show symptoms related to his meniscectomies that aren't already compensated by other.
Doesn't this view of the AMA then, you know, gut the direct review or the direct docket, which is intended to help the veterans by expediting decisions by the board on their claims? Wouldn't it gut it? Wouldn't it in every instance then you say, oh, gee, the veteran's entitled to change their mind at any point and introduce additional evidence or even say, I'd like a hearing?
No, Your Honor, I disagree with that. The veteran wouldn't be allowed to change his mind at any time. We're talking specifically about the period following, if that case actually goes all the way to the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims and the board committed an error, these, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 cases that get remanded a year to the board, that the veteran has a 90-day period or some other period, just a limited amount of time within which to submit additional evidence. Because the nature of the case has changed, again, from the time that veteran chose the direct review lane, this would not be a significant administrative burden on the VA and change the direct review lane. Most veterans are not going to appeal to the court. Most veterans, we hope that the board in many cases gets it right and is able to decide the claim and does not commit errors. But in those cases in which the board does commit errors, we think it is important for the veteran to be able to have a meaningful opportunity to prove his case at the board level with additional evidence.
May I ask a follow-up, Mr. Spataro? Based on your argument with respect to the appellant's choice of the direct review lane, would you argue that it would be a due process violation to not be able to present evidence before this court? Is that the logical extension of your argument?
No, Your Honor. This is, for all intents and purposes, an appellate court. And we are at the adversarial phase of the case. And I think it's very clear that appellants are not do not have the right to submit evidence to this court. But the board level, remember, it is the non-adversarial ex parte phase of a case where, again, the Congress has recognized that veterans have a right to submit additional evidence. And Your Honors, I see that my time is expired. May I quickly conclude, or I could do that on my rebuttal.
Why don't you save it for rebuttal, unless either of my colleagues have follow-up questions at this point. Judge Lauer, something else at this point?
Thank you. My follow-up question would have to do with USC 7113, and I understand appellate counsel's position, but how would you then read the statutory language that talks about the evidentiary record before the board shall be limited to the evidence of record at the time the decision of the agency of original jurisdiction on appeal? I mean, your position is that there's nothing under the AMA either in statute or in the regulations directly addresses what can be considered upon remand, but how would you square that with the plain language of 7113?
Your Honor, I don't believe you can read 7113 in isolation. Again, the AMA didn't alter in any way Chapter 72 of Title 38 of the U.S. Code. It didn't change Section 7252A, which gives the court the power to review board decisions and remand them as appropriate. There's no language in the AMA or its legislative history that indicates that Congress intended to restrict the court from doing what it has been doing for decades. The Secretary is arguing, in essence, that Congress intended to implicitly repeal the court's case law, and that's how you would have to be reading this. But the Supreme Court itself has held, in cases such as National Association of Home Builders v. Defenders of Wildlife, that repeals by statutes by implication are disfavored, and they will not be presumed unless the intention of the legislature to repeal is clear and manifest. The Supreme Court stated that it would not infer statutory repeal unless the later statute expressly contradicts the original act or unless that construction is absolutely necessary in order that the words of the later statute have any meaning at all. And in this case, Congress did not clearly and manifestly express an intent in the Appeals Modernization Act in general or in 7113 in particular to limit the court's power under Section 7250A to craft its remands as appropriate. And because Section 7113 doesn't expressly contradict 7250A, and it's not absolutely necessary to interpret Section 7113 in a way that it eliminates the court's authority to remand cases to the board and order the board to consider to allow veterans to submit additional evidence, the court should decline to find that Section 7113 prohibits the court from doing so.
Anything else, Judge Lauer, at this point?
No, thank you.
Judge Falvey?
No, thanks.
All right. Thank you, counsel. We have your rebuttal coming up, and you can continue then. We'll hear from the government.
Judge Greenberg, Judge Falvey, and Judge Lauer, good morning, and may it please the court. The parties agree that the court should vacate the board's decision and remand the issues on appeal. The parties disagree, however, as to whether the court should grant appellant's request to include language in its decision mandating that the board consider any additional evidence submitted to the board on remand from the court. The court should decline to do so for the following two reasons. First, the plain language of the relevant statutes, sections 5103, big A, little E2, and section 7113, limit and close the evidentiary record before the board and eliminate the board's responsibility to collect and develop evidence on a claimant's behalf. Taken together, these statutes make it clear that the AMA no longer allows the board to consider additional evidence when adjudicating the merits of an appellant's claim upon a remand to the board from this court. This court cannot ignore the clear mandate and processes set forth by Congress in the AMA. Second, the AMA does not preclude a claimant from submitting additional evidence to VA as a practical matter. Instead, It simply sets forth different processes regulating the when, how, and by whom that evidence can be considered, all driven by the claimant's choice. This includes a process for when, how, and by whom a claimant can have additional evidence considered by VA in an appeal that has been remanded by this court, which is also one of the reasons why appellant's case does not present facts right for the type of judicial intervention requested. And going to my first point here, Your Honor, about the plain language of the statutes. We first need to look at the background and the legislative history here to understand Congress's intent, because it is clear. We have to realize here that the AMA stems from an initiative that was a collaboration between VA, Congress, state and local government officials, and stakeholders, including veteran service organizations like MVLSP, who is representing the appellant in this case here, for the purpose of reforming an administrative appeals system that all of those groups agree was inefficient, ineffective, and confusing. There were two major focal points of the initiative. One was to streamline and expedite the VA appeals process while protecting due process rights. The other, which is most relevant here, was to end the churn, which was the phrase coined to describe the continuous gathering and introduction of new evidence built into the legacy appeals process. When you look at the committee reports on the AMA in both the House and the Senate, it is clear that Congress was thinking about what was happening at the board as it was constructing the AMA. It references facts from a 2017 GAO report, which notes that the board was remanding nearly half of its claims, half of its appeals disposed each year to VBA for additional development and re-adjudication. In the Senate report, Congress noted as background to the changes that are noted in Section 7113 that the claimant's ability to submit evidence in multiple ways, both before the initial decision at the board and after, including on remand, was an issue and a need for reform. The Congress acknowledged that it was limiting the windows, the evidentiary windows in the committee report. And it explicitly noted that it was not doing this in any way to alter the veteran-friendly nature of the VA claims and appeals process, and that it would closely monitor. But this tells you that it was a clear intent of Congress to limit the evidentiary record in the way that is plainly described in Section 7113. And this brings me to the language in Section 7113. You have to look at the whole structure of that statute. The heading itself clearly states evidentiary record before the Board of a Veterans Appeals. There is no limiting language. It doesn't limit to an initial decision by the board. It says evidentiary record before the Board of a Veterans Appeals. We also have to consider what the effect of a remand does. The remand from this court vacates the board's decision. So it essentially puts the claimant back at the same place, essentially waiting for an initial decision by the board. It just has the hindsight of some potential pitfalls that it should avoid in making this decision.
Mr. Mr. Scruggs. If that's the way we view it, that it puts you back at, you know, vacates the board's decision, and that's I agree with that, but puts you back to where you were before the board decision, why shouldn't that put you back to where you could introduce additional evidence or change which docket you're going to be on? And that our remand say, given that we're vacating and remanding, you're now back to where you were when you first were considering whether or not you were going to appeal this to the board.
Yes, Your Honor. You have to consider that yes, the remand does put you back there, but it puts you back in a place to where the evidentiary windows are already closed.
Well, they close, as I understand it, even after you receive an AOJ decision, you've got some period of time. I, off the top of my head, I can't recall what it is, 60 days maybe, or up to 1 year, to introduce additional evidence, right?
So, yes, Your Honor.
And you also have the right in your notice of disagreement to say, I would like a hearing and I'd like to introduce additional evidence.
That is correct. But notably, Your Honor, in all of those statutes that are given those rights, all of those rights are given prior to the initial board decision. So all of those windows close.
Right. But if we're vacating, we're back before the board decision.
Yes, and there's nothing in vacating that reopens those windows. That would clearly be contrary to the way that Congress constructed these statutes, which is that these windows close prior to the initial decision, and there's nothing in the statutes that indicate that they should reopen upon a remand.
Okay, let me ask you about Section 7107 then, which is titled Appeals, Dockets, Hearings. In subsection E of that section, it says the secretary shall develop and implement a policy allowing an appellant to move the appellant's case from one docket to another, a hearing docket or a non-hearing docket, in essence. Where did the secretary implement that, where it says the secretary shall implement a policy?
Yes, and you've already hit on that point, Your Honor, when you noted earlier that this policy is located in 38 CFR section 20.202, specifically, I think it's 202C provision, where it allows the claimant to modify the NOD to change dockets. This is also consistent. If you look at the legislative history, this is specifically mentioned in the committee reports before the Houses of Congress, as an example of a veteran initially choosing, once that AOJ decision had been issued, choosing to have the appeal reviewed under the docket lane, but then later, maybe later within that same window, the veteran might obtain representation and might choose that it would be more advantageous to then have a hearing. And so this policy, which was left to the discretion of VA by Congress, is found right there in 20.202, where the veteran can switch that docket. But again,
right.
Congress saw fit for this to all happen prior to the board's decision.
Right. But one of the things I'm struggling with is if we're vacating that decision, you know, where are we going back to? Where are we going back to where the veteran has the right to modify their election or not? And what is your statutory or regulatory language to say you don't go back all the way to the notice of disagreement stage and give them an opportunity to modify that?
Yes, Your Honor. That's where 38 U.S.C. Section 5103, big A, little E, 2 comes in. Congress explicitly said that the duty to assist shall not apply to the board, which means that the board is also not developing the record. And so to read the statutes in a way that would allow the veteran to modify the NOD, which essentially would place upon the board the obligation to then develop the record, which Congress has explicitly said that it did not want the board to do. So you have to read that those statutes in conjunction and look at the whole statutory purpose here.
So again, it's 5103, big A.
Big A, little E, 2.
E2.
And again, that explicitly states that the duty to assist shall not apply to the board here. And what we would
why is that the duty of assist if we say, gee, it goes all the way back to the to that initial nod stage where even after you submit an NOD, there's a period of time. And in that NOD, you say which lane you want to be in, right? And I want to modify my NOD to say I want to be in the other lane.
Well, if you're looking at...
That's not duty to assist. That's just giving them the right they had to begin with, giving it to them again, resetting the clock, if you will.
Well, I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor. If you look at both of those lanes, part of VA's duty to assist is not only developing, but receiving evidence that it may also then develop. And so when you're looking at those two lanes, the one lane allows for the submission of evidence, which then could, is one, receiving of that evidence, which again is part of the duty to assist, but two, would then also potentially obligate the board to develop further based on that evidence. And then certainly the hearing is the developing of evidence at that point in time, which again, in section 5103, big A, little E, 2, Congress has explicitly stated that it did not want the board to do for efficiency purposes and to be able to streamline the appeals in this new system.
Okay. And is it the same provision, 20.202C2, that where the secretary implements the requirement that the secretary shall develop a policy to permit a claimant to modify the NOD from section 7105?
That is correct.
It's the same provision.
Those yes.
And if and the secretary's position is if you elect in that initial NOD to go in the direct lane, you can't submit any additional evidence ever, not for 60 days after the AOJ decision, not for up to 1 year.
That is correct, Your Honor. With the selection of that direct review lane, the submission of evidence has to be in accordance to the provisions there that are listed in 7113. And I would note that changing lanes on a post-remand, just to be clear, it doesn't disadvantage this veteran because of direct review docket. What the secretary is saying here is that there is no evidence submission in any of the lanes because all of the windows are closed. But this is an important note in my second point here about the AMA system. The veteran is not without any recourse here, as has been argued in the case here. On remand, according to the regulations here and the statute, the veteran, if he has additional evidence to miss, which he has now claimed in his reply brief, he does, he has options under the AMA to have that evidence heard by VA. For example, he will have 1 year from the date of the court's decision in this case to file a supplemental claim to have that evidence heard before VA if he so chooses. And given the provisions of 38 CFR section 3.2500C4, he can do that without losing the benefit of any potential effective date based on his original claim. And so that is one option that the veteran has. Another option, and this is one of the features about the AMA system, where it was a deliberate change from a one-size-fit-all to a more individualized approach, which would allow the veteran to choose the best option. It's almost as if this veteran can have two bites at the apple. He could choose, and we have to remember that the error here is not that the board looked at the claim on the merits of a separating for under 5259. The board said that we don't find that regulation to apply, and the parties have agreed that that was wrong. So now the board will then look at the merits of the evidence. The claimant can choose, appellant can choose to have the board make a decision, because the board may choose, they may look at that evidence now that they know that 5259 should apply, and they may find that a separate rating is warranted on remand. The board may also find that the development that is going to be happening with the other claims may be relevant to the 5259 issue, and they may also remand it to the RO, in which the veteran could then submit his evidence. or if they make the decision, Your Honors, under the AMA, and again, without losing the benefit of any potential effective date, the appellant will have the option within 1 year of that board decision to choose either to submit the additional evidence with a supplemental claim after that board's decision, or could then appeal to the court, whichever he believes is more advantageous to his claim. So I just have to repeat that, but just because the evidence cannot be considered in the same way as it was in the legacy system does not mean that his evidence will not be heard. It's more about his choice.
And he also would have, if the board has to remand this for another examination, let me start that over. If the board has to send this back for an examination or further development, does the veteran have the option to submit a new NOD and seek a board hearing and additional evidence at that time?
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor. So let's say that the claim, the appeal goes back, and the board determines in this case that the development for the other two claims also pertains to this 5259 issue. They can then remand it to the RO, and at that point in time, the claimant is going to receive a new AOJ decision as to all of the issues, and also with respect to any evidence that the claimant submits to the RO. He will then have the same three review options. He could choose a higher level review, he could choose to file a supplemental claim, or he could choose to file a new NOD, in which, to your point, Your Honor, he could choose one of these other review lanes. And so the level of unknown and the level of speculation in this case is really the premise of the Secretary's rightness argument. To your point, Judge Greenberg, we understand that, yes, there does seem to be a conflict between the court's case law here, but our point about rightness was that there's so many unknowns that can happen based on the board's choice on remand, or even the appellant's choice on remand, that can moot the additional argument issue, and that would make any action by the court in this case unnecessary, that we just don't know. And plus, the Federal Circuit has recently said, specifically in regard to the AMA, that judicial intervention would be best considered in a direct application of the statute, of the AMA. We are trying to consider a context where appellant's facts don't present. This is not a situation where his case has been remanded and he tried to submit additional evidence and it wasn't heard. Instead, the argument here is based largely off of speculation. And so that was simply the Secretary's point here regarding the rightness of the issue and cautioning against judicial intervention here in the way that has been requested by appellant. And if I may,
could you please give a citation to the Federal Circuit case you just mentioned?
Yes, Your Honor. That would be Mock v. Wilkie. And more specifically, Your Honor, that would be, I apologize, just a second here. That would be, what I have is 2020 U.S. App Lexus 33328.
Okay, that Mock. Or Mock? Okay,
yes, Your Honor.
That was a petition? Is that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
And if I could just circle back to one point that you made earlier, Judge Falvey, about appellant's argument, as he relies a lot on 7252A. 7252A, to your point, does allow the court to, craft an order on remand. We acknowledge that to the point that you put up. But 7252 does not speak to the evidentiary record before the court. And notably, as stated before, 7252 does not give the court the right to act contrary to the mandates of Congress. And so it has to be read in conjunction with Section 7113, which is Congress's clear mandate about the evidentiary record before the board. And so the court, even in crafting an order, can't just ignore Congress's mandate. And so the Secretary just wanted to make that point and clear up regarding the authority under 7252.
Well, if I may, just could you either read to us or point us in the direction of where in that second statute, what is it, 7113?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where does Congress prohibit the conduct that the veteran wants to employ here, meaning on a joint motion for remand, submit additional evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. 7113 lays out the guidelines for the evidentiary record before the board. And so the parties, even in a joint motion for remand, have to act consistent with Congress's mandate there.
Well, what's inconsistent with congressional mandate to do what the appellant wants done?
Well, when you look at the plain language of the statute, Congress sets out a general rule for the evidentiary record before the board, which is that it should be based on the same evidence of record that was before the AOJ at the time of the AOJ decision. That is the general rule that is repeated in every section of Section 7113. So the record before the board is evidence that was considered at the time of the AOJ decision. So the consideration of evidence beyond that period is contrary to the statute, which is exactly what consideration of evidence would do. Now, Congress set out some very narrow and specific exceptions to that general rule, and that was with the hearing lane and the evidence submission. And again, all of those windows open and close prior to the board's decision. And you have to consider in general statutory construction that where Congress was setting the general rule and listing exceptions, it could have provided an exception for the very circumstance that appellant is arguing here. But it did not when it was listing exceptions. And so this court has to assume that that was a deliberate choice by Congress, and that has to be respected, Your Honor, respectfully.
Go ahead.
If I can just make one quick point regarding the merits of the claim here. In appellant's reply brief, he has argued that the Secretary has ignored the flare-ups argument. The Secretary submits that that argument should be rejected for a few reasons. First, that argument relies on the court's holding in McWhorter, and that case is factually distinguishable from this case. In McWhorter, the Secretary had submitted a remand to the court and wholly failed to address any other arguments raised by the appellant to include a reversal argument, just did not address it. Here, the argument proffered by appellant here was that the September 2017 VA exam was inadequate. The Secretary addressed that issue in his brief and explained why he agreed that that was inadequate. The fact that the Secretary did not include the flare-ups issue in his concession is a clear indication that the Secretary does not concede on that issue. So the court should consider that issue on the merits, and given that the 2017 examiner noted that appellant did not report flare-ups at the time of the exam, that should not be the basis of the remand here, Your Honor.
Thank you. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, I'll just close with this. As Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. explained, change does not roll in on the wheels of inevitability, but comes through continuous struggle. The continuous struggle by the agency, Congress, stakeholders, and others to make improvements to VA's administrative appeal system has produced progress in the form of the AMA. And while the Secretary acknowledges that change is hard, even 3 decades worth of it, change is hard and it is uncomfortable, but he submits that it is necessary if progress under the AMA is going to continue to be made, and that all of us involved must fight the reflexive instinct to try to fit the comfort and norms of the legacy system into the AMA system, where they no longer fit and no longer belong. So in that vein, Your Honors, the Secretary requests that the court vacate the board's decision and remand the issues pursued on appeal consistent with the concessions made by the Secretary in his brief and without the typical Kucharowski directive from the court. The court should also hold that Kucharowski and Fletcher while still good law for legacy appeals, are not controlling precedent for AMA appeals. Thank you.
Thank you. We understand your position expressed very well. Judge Lauer, do you have any further questions for the government here?
No, thank you.
Judge Falvey?
I do not. Thank you.
All right. We'll go back to appellant's counsel for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. There's just a few points that we would like to respond to. First, as Secretary's counsel noted, NVLSP was one of the organizations that participated in the discussions leading up to the AMA. And to our knowledge, there was never once did it come up the topic of what happens on remand when a case comes back to the board from the court. And as we mentioned before...
Well, just a minute. What do we care whether there was discussion or whether there was legislative history? We're dealing with the plain meaning of the statute, aren't we? As Justice Scalia would have said.
Yes, Your
Honor. The language is clear and unmistakable. Isn't that where we should direct our attention? And is the language clear and unmistakable? In other words, melding the two statutes together, the way I see it is, there's no clear and unmistakable effort by Congress to change the way in which things were done under the original statute, in the second statute. And accordingly, we should conclude that that's the manifestation of congressional intent. Therefore, you have the right to submit whatever you want when we remand it. Or we have the authority as a court to order that you be permitted to submit whatever additional material you want.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't know if I could have said it any better myself. Here we don't have any, and there's nothing in the statutes that repeals the court's authority in the AMA that repeals the court's authority to craft its remand orders. And again, the Supreme Court has noted this in the case I cited mentioned before, National Association of Home Builders v. Defenders of Wildlife, 551 U.S. 663.
This is Judge Falvey, but you're not arguing. I mean, no one's suggesting we don't have the power to give remand instructions. The Secretary is not arguing that. I haven't heard anyone argue that. But the problem is, it's to remand as appropriate, which I read we're limited, of course, by the law. We can remand as appropriate under the law. What you're suggesting and what the Secretary is suggesting the opposite of is the Secretary is saying the law says you can't order this on remand. You're suggesting that we not only can, but we should, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So I guess you're going to have to get me here on why it is you keep going back to whether or not we have the power or not. I didn't hear the Secretary to suggest that we have no power on remand to do what's appropriate under the law.
Well, Your Honor, we have binding precedent under Kucharowski and Fletcher.
And their point is that that's distinguishable. The statute has changed.
But, Your Honor, we would argue that Congress didn't expressly change the case law. It was aware of that case law.
Could I ask you about Fletcher? You're pretty much running out of time now, so I want to ask you about Fletcher, and we haven't had any chance to talk about that. What does Fletcher get you? You know, the language of Fletcher is that there'll be a critical examination of the evidence of record, and the board can seek any other evidence the board feels is necessary and issuing a timely and well-supported decision. What does that get you?
Your Honor, I think it gets us the main takeaway from Fletcher is that the board should not be limited to the four corners of a court order or a joint motion for remand when it reviews a case. Again, we're back in the non-adversarial ex parte phase of a case. And at that phase, the board, according to Fletcher, has an obligation to review the record in detail. And if it identifies any other theories that may support benefits, it should be able to grant those benefits and not just strictly abide by the court's decision in the joint motion for remand. again, the secretary has an obligation to render a decision which grants every benefit that can be supported by law. And it shouldn't be limited to the very strict language of the court's order or the court's the joint motion for remand by the parties.
And thank you.
To respond to one other point of the secretary's, 5103A, the duty to assist, that really has nothing, in our opinion, to do with a veteran's right to submit evidence. We're not asking the secretary, upon receipt of that evidence, to conduct additional development. We would agree that the board doesn't have a duty to go and get a new examination, to request additional records. But the veteran does, we argue, have a right to submit evidence. Simply the receipt of evidence can't be considered the VA's an obligation of the duty.
Just a minute. Doesn't the way I read the statute under the duty to assist, every member of the board who at a hearing or in consideration of an appeal has an obligation to familiarize themselves completely with the file and to assist or make whatever suggested changes might be helpful to the veteran in perfecting their case, do they not?
Yes, Your Honor, they do.
So that's at the board level.
Yes, Your Honor.
I think I agree with Judge Falvey here that we're talking about a matter of statutory construction and not the power of the court, the inherent power of the court or the power of the court under the, I'm going to call it the enabling or the original statute in 1988. So given that, aren't we really talking about why go back without the language? All right, let me state it another way. Why do you insist on the language in this joint remand order? Why don't you just take the secretary's position? He's a party. You're a party. You're going back to the non-adversary world of the board, and you make your argument there.
Your Honor, we know that if we go and make that argument to the board, they will reject it, and it will result in delay, additional unnecessary delay to the veteran to get his case resolved. If the court orders the veteran to have the opportunity to submit evidence, he has the opportunity to timely have a decision by the Board of Veterans Appeals that grants his benefits. Without that opportunity, his case, he will have to delay, like the secretary said, potentially file a supplemental claim, add months and months to the resolution of his case.
So we're back to where we were, at least from my standpoint, at the beginning of the argument as the basis for the importance of having a clear determination from us now.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Judge Lauer, do you have any questions for the appellant?
No further questions. Thank you.
Judge Falvey?
No, I don't. Thank you.
You need any further time? Because I think we understand your position very well.
Your Honor, if I may very briefly close the case.
Yes.
We'd ask the court to remand Mr. Andrews' case for the reasons set forth in his brief and those discussed today, and hold that he has a right to submit additional evidence to the board on remand as required by Kucharowski and the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment. We also ask the court to hold that the board must conduct a critical examination of the justification for its decision as required by Fletcher. Both of these holdings are within the court's authority under 38 U.S.C. section 7252A to remand cases as appropriate. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your argument and the briefing submissions made before. They were both quite excellent. The case will be submitted.
And the court is in recess.